This is Roger Bennett of Men in Blazers.
Hey, this is Alexi Lawless.
You're listening to the Mouths of the South podcast.
Mouths of the South podcast, right here on Dirty South Soccer.
Rock on.
Eat it up.
This is the Mouths of the South podcast.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
The official Dirty South Soccer podcast.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Talking all things Atlanta United FC.
Don't nobody understand the words that are coming out of your mouth, man.
We are
the Mouths of the South.
The South got something to say. That's all I got to say.
All right, what's up, Atlanta? We are back. It is the Mouths of the South podcast for Dirty South Soccer. Thank you so much for joining us. We do like to start these things off by running down all the different ways you can get in touch with us. You can follow us on Twitter at MOTS Podcast. Also, follow Dirty South Soccer on Twitter at Dirty South Soc. You can follow us individually. I am at Sam J. Franco. He is at Eric Quintana 47. You can also follow, there you go. You can also follow Jason at Jason Izza Smith. Not with us today because, well, maybe his baby's being born right now. He said possible. Proceed without me. So if Baby is a Smith is indeed on the way, congratulations to Jason, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Send your congratulations. Although, send your blessings and prayers over.
That's
to
right. Send it to at Jason is a Smith, and I'm sure he would appreciate all of that. And yeah, I don't know when the next time we will have Jason on with us, because if he does have a newborn baby, that means that probably is going to take up a big chunk of his time. So we will look forward to talking to Jason whenever the next time we do is.
He might want to come on, but the wife, he might be like, no, we got to take care of the baby.
That's exactly right. Priorities, my friends. DirtySouthSoccer.com is where you find all of our stuff, including some articles that yours truly and Eric have written recently. I wanted to thank everybody for the very well-received responses I got on my Friday free kick last week, the top 10 bands you would have heard on 99X in the 90s. Yes, I do realize that leaving Stone Temple Pilots off was a vast oversight. These things happen sometimes. I apologize. But still a very fun article for me to write. Definitely took me back, a good nostalgia piece there. So thank you for that. And obviously the Chuckdown check-in, the interview that you and our man Seamus Grady did with Alex Tambakis was very, very good. If you haven't heard that yet, head over to DirtySouthSoccer.com and check that out, because it is very good, a very good interview indeed.
I'm invited,
Eric,
to the wedding.
Really? How about
invited,
that?
He's going to have a Greek wedding. I told him, you know, let me know when the invitations go out. I'll send you my address. And he's like, you know, we're going to take care of you. So I take that to mean
that awesome.
I take that to mean I'm part of the family now. So
all I got to say about that is, opa!
Yeah, exactly.
Give me
opa.
Some euros. Give me some euros, because that is probably my favorite sandwich. So I digress. But anyway, welcome back into the Mouths of the South. We got plenty of good stuff to get to today, including some talk of some uniforms. We're also going to talk about some match day traditions and how Eric and I, it's funny, Eric and I were kind of arguing about something without actually realizing what each other were talking about in terms of like a supporter group section name and all that stuff. But we're kind of on the same page with it now, so we'll get to that a little later. Also going to talk about
can we time out for a second?
Oh, yeah,
there
please,
was right there, there's a tweet from Darren Eels, and by the time you guys hear this, it'll be, you know, hours if not days into the future. But Darren Eels, he's traveled more than anyone I know. Any businessman, he's literally traveling all over the world. He sent a tweet literally 2 seconds ago. Traveling in the royal style back to Atlanta with the King of the Netherlands. He has traveled literally everywhere in Europe. I dare say if he's been to South America, he's definitely been around the U.S. That dude is doing his homework.
I was going to say, I mean, if he's talking to the King of the Netherlands, that must mean that he is negotiating with Wesley Schneider, like I wrote in a Gold Rush piece, right?
Maybe. I mean, you never know. Look, he's been to Chelsea. He's been to – I'm trying to think where else he's been. Has he been to Manchester?
Oh, not 100% sure. I know he did go – like you said, Chelsea, went to London. And, yeah, the guy is a world hopper. I mean, he is doing all of the due diligence. Pretty much, I think, just going and looking at a bunch of different clubs and seeing how they run things and bringing back some of the positives to Atlanta United, but also realizing that this is a team and a city and an organization that's probably going to do things a little bit differently. And I think that has started with the great work we're seeing with the academy stuff, and we'll get to that a little bit later on in the show. We'll also have a couple of other topics to get to here, so plenty of good stuff to get to, including a topic that I will, I guess, keep as a surprise, but that that Eric and I just kind of threw out here when we were talking to each other right before jumping on here. So plenty to get to. Looking very much forward to the rest of our discussion today. But first, we want to talk about, I guess, what's the best word to call these? Concept kits.
No, wait. We have news.
Oh, is this breaking news?
Well, we're not breaking news, but we got news we wanna announce, don't we?
Oh, that's right.
Or do we want to wait till later? Do we want to later? Do we want to extend the tease until the? I mean, they can fast forward, so maybe we should just do it now?
Yeah, I think we should just do it now.
Let's do it now.
Mean, once we've already thrown it out here, we will have a very special guest joining us next week, and we will probably do the interview, or we're going to do the interview on Monday, but we're gonna wait and post it probably a little later in the week, just so we don't overload you guys. But I'll let Eric fill you guys in on this.
Matthew, the armchair analyst, Doyle. He's now the at MLS analyst on Twitter, but he is pretty much the guy when it comes to MLS and all the inner workings and figuring out how things go. He's an analyst. He analyzes everything he sees on the field from the MLS play, and you know he's a good guy to bring on when you're trying to figure out the inner workings of Atlanta United and how that's being viewed across the league. So we're going to bring him on for that. We're going to discuss some of the academy stuff that, you know, I'm sure a lot of you have seen out there now, and we're going to discuss some of that today, but he's going to have a better understanding of how that is just different from other clubs and how it's been done in the past and how the whole expansion thing has been done in the past. So he's a great person to have on. Again, we'll have him on Monday, but yeah, we'll probably maybe Tuesday or Wednesday we'll release the episode just so that, yeah, again, you guys aren't overloaded. But yeah, again, he talks MLS, U.S. national team. He watches, you know, Premier League. He is, if you're not following him, again, at MLS analyst on Twitter, and he's definitely a good follow. He's one of those guys that I have on the notifications are set to receive all of his tweets because he's that good.
Boom. Well, we very much look forward to that. So we'll have that coming up next week. But as for this week's show, we will start talking about concept kits. And we've seen a lot of concept kits from various places released. Obviously, Conrad Burry was kind of the first to really hit people with some really good designs. And Conrad has done some good work. But I think Iron Tooth Design, that's at Iron Tooth Design on Twitter, has really stepped their game up and kind of dropped the mic here. We had an article on Dirty South Soccer profiling all these different concept kits that at Iron Tooth Design did. They did a home kit, an away kit, a goalkeeper kit, and a third kit, and they are all very, very awesome. And you know, not to offend anybody that's done a concept kit or anything yet, but yeah, this guy definitely dropped the mic with his.
No, it is. They're all clean. They are very clean. I would buy these today. I would. I'd be okay if this is what they went. I know the alternative kit, the third kit, has stirred up a little bit of a conversation. But it looks so pretty.
It really does. It really does. We'll start with the home kit, which is
here's the other thing. It kind of came out of nowhere.
It did.
We were joking about how you know the we had the oh man, I can't remember the design concept. I forget the name of the company that did it, but they did the little contest of best kits, and you had a bunch to choose from, and I forget who exactly were the judges, but they had a panel of judges that decided. And they're all people that Austin Long is one of them, and they're all people that that talk about kits and you know, have podcasts specifically dedicated to maybe some kits that are, you know, historical kits and just kits that look good. I don't know, just kit podcasts, if you will. And so they had that, and then this kind of got dropped, I think, the next day or maybe the day after, and we were all just taken by surprise because these were just so excellent, and the fact that they didn't get even – they weren't included because I don't think they were part of the contest. Was just kind of amazing because they kind of came out of nowhere, and it was unanimously, at least the home and away kits, And even the goalkeeper, I think, because I don't think anyone's gonna care about a goalkeeper so much, Kit. But the home and away one, everyone seemed to just universally just love.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, you know, obviously starting with a home kit, very much like a lot of the ones we've seen, very AC Milan-ish with the red and black stripes. But this one's really clean with the collar and the little gold accent on the collar, the black sleeves with a gold trim on the end of the sleeves. And I like the shorts with the black shorts with the gold stripes and the Adidas logo with the actual logo on the pants. I don't like it when, you know, if you have a home or an away kit and it has like a shadow logo or like just like a two-color logo, put the whole logo on the shorts.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what's going to make people really want to buy them and for merchandising purposes. So the home kit isn't much different than a lot of other home kits we've seen, but still looks really nice. These jerseys that he has done don't have a sponsor on them. And I'm sure, you know, obviously they will have one.
Does it matter who it is, though? I mean, no matter what it is, it's just going to look nice.
Yeah, I mean, as long as, you know, it's not super gaudy or some dumb-looking logo. Like, for example, is it Philadelphia Union that's sponsored by Bimbo?
Yeah.
Like, that is I'm
curious as to how that relationship started, because isn't that a Mexican bread company?
Yeah, well, Bimbo, they make, like, breads
and
little
sweet
like
breads.
Pastries
yeah,
and
sweet
snacks
breads.
And things like that. Yeah, you know, I always see them when I'm checking out at the QT in the morning, like, on my way to work. And, like, I always go by them and say, I always think to myself, those look really good. But, like, I've never bought one. But, yeah, they have a little sweet cakes and stuff. So, yeah, just unfortunate that the translation doesn't really jump across cultures like that. You know, Bimbo might be a harmless word in Spanish, but definitely not in English. So hopefully we don't end up with something like that.
Someone suggested, speaking of the home kit, that maybe that the red and I saw somewhere, I forget where I saw it, but that maybe that the red and black stripes should be switched, that the red stripes, the stripes that are red now should be black, and the stripes that are black now should be red, because it would coincide better with the logo. And I kind of agree, because you have that middle stripe going right down the middle, and in the logo, it's the red stripe that goes right down the middle. Now, I know it's a small thing, but still, it might be cool to see the alternative to what it might look like if it were the other way around. But I love the collar. The collar on both of these, the home and away, look just unbelievable. We haven't seen this. It's on DirtySouthSoccer.com. I'm sure it's the first thing that pops up, because that's what it was when I clicked on it. But moving on to
I just love that little gold accent there on the home. Yeah, you know, that the collar has that little gold thing on it. That is sweet. And for a guy like me who, you know, has got a little pepper to show off in the chest area. you know, that helps in terms of not creeping too low there. So, you know, just looking out for guys like me, I appreciate that. Going on to, like you said, the away kit, this is clearly far and away and easily the best away kit that anybody has put out.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. I think there was some maybe conversation about whether or not you'd have an away kit with, you know, a gold accent or, you know, gold trim or whatever. I think this one, everyone's going to be okay with the red, because it just looks absolutely amazing. It just
no question about
perfect.
It. The white, it's for those of you who haven't seen, I'll try to describe it to you. But again, go to DirtySouthSoccer.com and you can find it there. It's a white kit with very thin sort of grayish stripes, I guess. You know, maybe kind of black. It's just a more of a gray, just a dark stripe that you can see. But they're very thin. And it's hoops, you know, it's not vertical stripes, it's horizontal stripes. So you've got that, and then you've got the, you know, the Adidas and the logo, and then you've got, like, the stripes on the shoulders, which we're seeing a lot from Adidas now. They're that kind of burgundy-ish red of Atlanta United. And then the shorts are my favorite part of this, because they're, you know, the burgundy-ish red with the white stripes. I think those are the cleanest-looking shorts I've seen yet.
They look so, yeah, they just look great. It's a... almost like a blood red, right?
Yeah, it's like a blood red, or kind of like a. It's not Alabama crimson. It's a little red than
exactly.
That. But still, it's very good looking. So I by far the best away kit I've seen.
I just love the collar. I maybe it's just me with collars, but I think that makes it a little more of a jersey, if you will.
I agree with that.
The collar aspect of it. You got the black the black on the sleeves, which I think looks pretty nice. It just looks so clean, just so crisp. Just want to buy. Like I I was joking on Twitter about just like, you know, when, how can I funnel just all my paychecks to Atlanta United so they can just send me everything they have so far? That's all I want. I just want, I want to give my paychecks to Atlanta United so they can just start sending me, you know, stuff as they come out, because this looks great.
That's not a bad idea. You know, we see this a lot. Like nowadays, like you kind of see these brands that'll send you like boxes of things once a month.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's like a Nerd one where they send you like Star Wars gear and like toys and stuff. Like there's also like some clothing brands that'll like basically send you like a new outfit each month. And it's like a club thing you join where you pay monthly for it. Atlanta United could probably do pretty well if they like you joined a club for maybe like $20 a month or something. And, you know, maybe some months you got something that was worth more than 20. Some months you got something that was less than 20. But some months you got something maybe right around 20. And, you know, they just sent you a new item each month.
And you
I think that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, you alternate it so that some people get the really cool things. Some people get the, you know, the not so expensive things. Not to say they're not cool, but just not as expensive or not as noteworthy, if you will. And then you got people showing it off on Twitter and all that good stuff. Then other people getting mad. Yes. I think it's funny the people that get mad, and we have to dive into this too deep, but the people that get mad that haven't gotten either the email or the call for season tickets, I don't think they understand how many people are in line.
Yeah, I mean, you know, was it Deadspin earlier that posted an article that said Atlanta United has sold 25,000 season tickets? Again, that's, you know, reservations. I don't think we've gotten official numbers from Atlanta United yet on how many they've actually converted from, you know, the initial $50 deposit into actual season ticket sales. But we'll get there eventually, I'm sure.
Either way, that
number
is wrong because it was 29,000 last we checked. I think they just they cited some like older article. But
well,
I
got to take it for what it is.
But I just did the math. If it's 80%, I think what they were hoping for was 80%. I think that's what they were. That was the goal, and that was kind of what they were on track for. That's 23,200 season tickets.
That would be very solid for a team that has never kicked a ball. So
that doesn't have a coach, doesn't have players.
Right. But getting back to the uniforms, you know, obviously the home and away kit were great. The goalkeeper kit is fantastic. You know, I know you said earlier a lot of people probably don't care about a goalkeeper kit, but this one kind of nods to the Atlanta flag, the blue and the gold there. This is an all-blue kit with yellow accents, so the logo is yellowish gold on the pants and the shirt. So it's very blue, but it's falls in line with a lot of other goalkeeper kits, and I think it looks really good, and I think it's nice to nod back to the flag of the city of Atlanta.
Yeah, much like Columbus did with their away kits, I think.
Is the away kit the one with that god-awful baby blue on it with the white and the yellow?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say what it looked like. I was just going to leave it at the away kits, I think. But because I don't want to get in trouble by anybody, so.
Well, it's not getting in trouble. If it's your opinion that it's an ugly kit, and it is my opinion that it's an ugly
it's
kit.
It's not the greatest
that.
Kit, no.
So just throwing it out there, but that's the goalkeeper kit. And then last but not least, this is the one that has kind of drawn, I guess, the most talking points, is this third kit that they are calling or that Iron Tooth Design is calling AT Alien Proud. And it's just a lime green kit with like a little cross X kind of going through the logo, and
like a Volt
kind of
green.
Going across the chest. Yeah, yeah, it's kind of like a Volt green. Not the same green as the Hawks, but a little more green than yellow than what the Hawks do. But the shorts are white and the socks are green. I think it looks kind of cool. You know, third kits are supposed to be out there and different and not like what you would normally see your team wearing. I think, you know, Barcelona had that all-orange kit a few years back that, you know, you never would have saw coming from Barcelona. No, Manchester United in the past has had, you know, I'm looking in my closet right now as we do this podcast, and I'm seeing one of my Man United kits that's got, like, blue and black checkers on it, which is, like, obviously not Man United colors. So third kits are supposed to be different, And I really like that one, and I think it could be something you played around with too. You know, you could do green, you could do a bunch of different colors.
Well, it'd be cool if they, because I mean, this one's this one's specifically a callback to the AT Alien song by Outkast, which is cool. And I thought maybe it would
a song and album.
Yeah, song and album. And I think it'd be cool if instead of just coming up with cool designs, which I mean I'm sure, which I'd be totally up for. I know there was someone with the article that I put out on Dirty South Soccer on the non-traditional kits that would be good, I guess, a few weeks ago. I thought that maybe something cool that they could do is callbacks to other things. I'm not sure. I don't have anything off the top of my head, but if this is a callback to the Outkast, then this makes sense. I think what a lot of people are concerned with is that they don't want that AT Alien brand, I guess, if you will, associated directly with Atlanta United. I don't think that's what they want the reputation, I guess, to be. They don't want to be called, you know, the AT Alien Hooligans or anything like that. They want to be...
And folks, well, I was just going to say, yeah, that is that's something for sure that is a very divisive topic. And this is what we in the business like to call a segue into our next topic. Obviously, supporter group names and kind of names, nicknames of the fans and things like that is something that we've kind of talked about before, but it's something that we kind of want to bring back up because, as you said, this AT Aliens thing, it seems to be kind of divisive. I don't really understand the, I guess, blowback on the name itself. I'm not really in favor of branding the supporter group right off the bat, or branding a nickname for the team right off the bat, because I feel like that's something that can kind of happen organically.
Yeah, no, and it'll take time, I think, more than anything else.
Right.
It's something, I mean, look at some of the teams in Europe and how they haven't had, and this is kind of a discussion we had on the last podcast that we're just kind of carrying over into this one. I think the Gunners with Arsenal was like 30 years in the making or something like that.
Right.
I'm not sure of the other examples, but that's something that I'm not concerned with. I'm not concerned about what to name the supporter section. I'm not concerned with what to have as a mascot. I am with some people in that I don't even know if we need a mascot, to be honest. That's very much an American thing, and while I want Atlanta United,
hold on, I gotta stop you there. It's not necessarily an American thing. I mean, look over at the EPL. Manchester United has that devil that walks around, and there are plenty of teams over there that have some sort of mascot. I'm not saying that, you know, I 100% want a mascot, but, I mean, there is a precedent for it.
Yeah, no, I agree, but they also, I don't know, it just seems like an American thing. And for EPL enthusiasts who are trying to get into MLS, that's what they're going to see it as. Whether you like it or not, that's what they're going to see it as. They're going to see it as, you know, a soccer trying to take on a sort of Americanism, if you will, whether or not that exists in, you know, the Premier League, or to be honest, I don't see it in Spain. I don't see it in France. I don't see it, you know, in Italy as much. So maybe it's just an English thing, I guess. The point I'm trying to make is I there's no need to rush anything.
You know, I think you don't see it because it's just not really, you know, publicized a lot. PSG does have a mascot. I'm looking at a picture of him right now. It's a weird looking cat.
Yeah, but did you know that before you looked it up?
I did not. But
that's the point. It's a very Americanized thing that comes with all the other sports that we played.
Yeah, no, I get it. And you know, Lyon, pardon my pronunciation. Their mascot is appropriately a lion. Chelsea also have a lion. Arsenal have that weird dragon dude that walks around. So, I mean, they're there. Man City have these two, like, weird, I don't really even know what those are. They're like, you know, wombats or something. But, like I'm saying, they don't publicize it. But, yeah, for game day experience, there's, like, a dude in a suit walking around. I mean, Hull has the tiger. I'm trying to see if AC Milan has something here. But the point is, you can have it. It just doesn't need to be something that you're throwing out there, like, right out in front. Hey, this is our mascot. You know, just you can have it, and that's fine. Like, have it for the kids, you know? You have, like, a little guy walking around saying hey to the kids. That's fine. But, yeah, it's not something that you really need to throw right out front and center.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm cool with having one eventually. There's no need to rush it. I forget exactly what my opinion was. I think it was specifically when it came to the supporters group, and I thought the names that they had thrown out were kind of cool, but I'm of the same mentality when it comes to that stuff. I know Terminus Legion threw out the Gulch, and I immediately was just like, no, please no. But
yeah, that's way too specific, and like not a reference that enough people would get.
You'd have to hope that you'd have to really teach upper suburban metro Atlanta what the Gulch is, because the people that live in Atlanta are the only ones that know what it is. And either way, just I don't know. The caller we had last week on said, if it's something that we have to force that we're, taking votes on and trying to, ingrain into the culture of Atlanta United, then maybe we should just shouldn't have one. It shouldn't be that way. It should be natural and organic and just happen, and everyone just is on board because it's just the natural thing to do. I don't know. Maybe, an eagle decides to fly into our stadium, and then all of a sudden we're War Eagle. I don't know.
No, God, no.
That's just what I'm saying. Let's let it happen organically and not worry about it so much. Which I think most of the people are kind of on board with. I know some people.
Yeah, no, I can see that.
I think some people have seen the names and seen the ideas for mascots or names for the supporters. Yeah, the supporters section. But let's just hold off on that. Let's just get into the season first, see how things go, because my thought will always be, it might be cool now, but in 10 years from now, we're going to look back and think, that was it. Like, I have the feeling that's what happened with the Gulch. You're going to have a whole generation of new fans that come up, sit in the Gulch, and have no idea what you're talking about. They're just going to know the supporter section as the Gulch.
You know, I like the name ATLians just because I like Outkast, and I think that it's a cool name. You know, every city, like, if you're from Detroit, I don't really know. I don't know why I said Detroit, because I don't know what you call people from Detroit. But if you're from Atlanta, I think some people say, well, you're Atlantan. I tell people I'm an ATLian. That is what I say. And I think that's something that's kind of cool. But at the same time, I can understand why it might not be a name that everybody likes. And so that's the thing. You don't need to have something divisive. And if it's not something that not everybody agrees on, but that a majority of people can agree on, then you're just going to upset people. So I don't think you should have that. And quite frankly, I'll say this. One thing that I think Atlanta United did not do very well was sending out that sort of, here are some team names, or here are some names of what do you guys want? That's something that they probably should have like focus grouped and not sent out to everyone, because I feel like that was extremely divisive. And I know that everybody has accepted Atlanta United as a team name now, but all people are talking about from when finally Atlanta United was unveiled as a team, that all people were talking about was, this is crap, or this is really good, or that's something where, yeah, maybe you focus group it, but don't send it out to like everybody in like a mass email, because I think that caused a lot of consternation.
Well, now, at first we thought that. Okay, let's look at what Atlanta United has done since 2016 started. We're getting the stadium underway, and it looks like it's going to be awesome. The academy is up and coming, and we just released the renderings for the training facility. By all accounts, we look to already be one of the better franchises. I'm not going to say it that like that, but we look to be extremely influential, we're making an impression
right
on MLS, and I think some of the other leagues are at least taking notice as to what we're doing. I'm not saying that all of a sudden we are, the token franchise of MLS. That's not what I'm saying. But it looks like we're on track to possibly becoming that. A team that does academy the right way, a team that establishes themselves and creates, becomes that expansion franchise the right way. That doesn't do a NYCFC and does better than Orlando City. We're almost becoming that model franchise for, the next four that are coming into play. Miami FC, Detroit City FC, Sacramento, whatever they end up being called. Even Minnesota United, as much as they don't like to hear this, or they won't like to hear this, we might become that, this is how you do it in the future. Remember when we brought on, some of the guys that, I guess the MLS pundits, and we talked about, who we asked them, who should we model ourselves after? Who should we try to emulate, if you will? And I think that's what we will be for the next four teams that come into play in the next, 4 or 6 years?
Yeah.
I forget what the timeline is, but you get my point that it's at, that United brand is something different now, and it's I think it's obviously we all when we hear United we all think Manchester United and how big and glorious and extravagant it is, and that is sort of what Atlanta United is becoming for MLS. Now they still have a long way to go, but that is sort of what they're becoming. And so I think it's different to look at that Atlanta United name now and what that brand means than it did, you know, when we first found out that that was the name. In addition, and we'll get into this when the academy stuff comes into play, but there's a serious possibility that we're uniting the biggest region of the United States that no one in MLS has touched, giving us reason to use that name United in uniting the entire Southeast. So it's not, this isn't just a random combination of words to make a team name. It seems to mean something a lot more now, at least in my opinion.
No, I totally agree. And, you know, you're not going to find anybody that thinks Atlanta United did things more right than me. I mean, you know, I that was really just kind of one small criticism in terms of, I think they probably should have, again, maybe focus group that stuff and not put it out for all of the season ticket supporters to see just because it was kind of a divisive topic. But other than that, like I said, I think they've done so much right, including our next topic, the academies. Or the academies, it's one academy, but you know what I mean. The academy and how so far everything looks to be going swimmingly in that regard. It was really cool, that kind of thing they sent out. Was that earlier today where they're sending all of the invitees, I guess, out?
Yeah.
These cool little things where it says, you have been chosen. And so, imagine being a 13, 14-year-old kid and you get this thing in the mail from a professional soccer club that says, hey, you've been chosen to be in our academy. That would be really, really cool. So I think they did a really good job with that just right off
the bat. Let me find the actual tryout invitation. They were tryout invitations that they sent out.
Okay, that's what it is. That's what
and,
it is. But still, that's still really cool to get that from a professional soccer team.
The video that they sent out, so there's a new Atlanta United Academy Twitter account, and it's at Academy ATLUTD, if you want to follow that along. And they their first tweet was this video that at first everyone over at Dirty South Soccer was like, what is this? Like, cool that you have Academy Twitter account. But it was just kind of – it was a little strange for us because we were just like, what is this? What are they doing? It makes a lot more sense now. And I think that's just kind of the way it's going to go with Atlanta United. They're going to send something out, and you're not going to know exactly what it means, and then eventually it's going to make sense, which is basically what I explained with the whole Atlanta United thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a dad or a close friend maybe, but there's a picture of that I retweeted – of a kid who got his little invitation in the mail, and you've been chosen. It's got the Atlanta United. It looks like a flag or a poster thing. I'm not sure what that is, but it's got the Atlanta United emblem on it, and it's clearly like a 12, 13, 14-year-old kid who has been chosen to try out for Atlanta United. I mean, that's awesome. That's the kind of stuff that I love to see.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt about that. I think that, again, you know, we don't have players. We don't have a whole lot to talk about right now. So when you see something like that, it really does, you know, look kind of cool. And you see a picture of a kid, you know, on Twitter, and they've retweeted some folks that have gotten those tryout invitations. I mean, we could be looking at one of the next Atlanta United stars, you know? I mean, you never know. So I think that was really cool. And that's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the academy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they have they've done a lot going into here, and you're a little more familiar with the Top Drawer Soccer article about all this. And we had a pretty long discussion on our kind of Dirty South Soccer chat page today about all of this stuff. But
yeah,
kind of just run down this article for a little bit and really just what Atlanta United is already doing and making waves. And I mean, these are some things that they're doing or other people are looking at and being like, wow, man, like they're already doing that.
So, yeah. So it all started, the notice came when Will Parchman from Top Drawer Soccer, and he does some other things too. I think he writes for Yeah, you can find him on Twitter, @WillParchman. You can see all the other things he's doing. But he's got a good following. He's a big MLS guy, so, and, you know, he's not a nobody. People know who he is. He sent out a series of tweets, and I'll just read them one by one. The first one, and this was maybe a week or two, about a week ago. Here's a fun hashtag MLS thing. Georgia United, which is obviously one of the academy soccer academies in Georgia, which made the DA finals last year. I think that's just a tournament for all the top academy clubs. It's usually kept to MLS clubs. I think it's just MLS clubs, the academy clubs for, you know, all the MLS teams. Well, that Georgia United has been under technical control of Atlanta United since September. Mm-hmm. I think that date is actually August. I'm not 100% sure, but I think that's August. He sends out another tweet that says, "So every U16 and U18 Georgia United player is, right now, accruing homegrown minutes for Atlanta United, which does not yet have a first team." So, again, all the U16, all U18 players are essentially in the academy, and the clock has been running for potential homegrown status once this August hits.
And some of these kids are U.S. youth nationals.
Oh, yeah. No,
some of them have been reached out to already by, you know, English clubs and European clubs that have been tracking them. So for Atlanta United to have an inside and early in with some of these kids is phenomenal.
Oh, and here they come. Here's the third tweet. "This means highly prized U.S. youth national players like Andrew Carlton and Chris Gosselin," I think it's Christopher Gosselin, "could conceivably be signed as homegrowns from the club's first week." Andrew Carlton and Chris Gosselin, again, U.S. U-17, I think they're being talked about playing in the U-17 World Cup. I'm not exactly sure when that is, but Andrew Carlton, we've seen play. If you've seen some highlights, he is a pacey kid. On one highlight, he just absolutely dismantles and just breaks his guy's ankle just running down the sideline. And he's been touted as possibly the best player Georgia's, and here's the key, developed. There are four players right now that were at one point sent to the that were on the U-17, I believe, U.S. youth national team, that were developed in Georgia. It's not like they were signed and brought over here or anything like that. They were developed in Georgia under the Georgia United Academy. Then there's the last tweet. "I continue to be impressed, surprised, and a little confused at how Atlanta United has rolled out its organizational ethos, which has always been, we want a strong, strong academy system, and that's how we will support our, you know, the first team." It's kind of like the Dallas model where, you know, the youth team, you develop youth kids into the pros that eventually play on the first team. Mm-hmm. That, I think, sparked what ultimately was the Top Drawer Soccer article that he wrote, which again says that four guys, you know, were in the U-17 U.S. youth national team in 2014, 2015. After the game, after the semifinal game, I believe, in that, you know, the DA finals last year. Yeah, the Developmental Academy, that's what it stands for. DA finals last year, that's when, in this article, it says Atlanta United approached Georgia United and basically said, you know, we will absorb your U16 and U18 U16, U18 academy teams, which are nationally recognized at this point. And Georgia United would have and continue to have the U12, U13, and U14. And I want to say, and I don't know what the plan is necessarily, but I want to say that the Georgia United teams would feed into the Atlanta United teams. I don't know that for sure. I don't know exactly how that works, because homegrown the homegrown rules and regulations are, I wish you could have been in the chat that I was in, because I had a million questions. It's not that easy to comprehend. Again, that means that of August of this year, Atlanta United could sign these players to homegrown contracts. Andrew Carlton is 16 years old. I'm not exactly sure how old Christopher Gosselin is, but I imagine he's either 15 or 16. And again, both in discussion for U-17 World Cups. And just a quote from the article. Actually, two quotes. "Georgia United may still be the name on the crest, but every one of its players are banking minutes towards homegrown status, according to Tony Annan."
Oh, that's so awesome.
If the math works out, Atlanta United could conceivably pull off a major coup and sign the 16-year-old Carlton to a homegrown deal before playing its first official match. Now, Andrew Carlton has been basically looked at by just about every team in England.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of iffy whether he eventually signs with or whether eventually plays with Atlanta United. But having developed that player, it's almost like a Yedlin deal where he ends up going. You get money for him in return. Yedlin, when he went to Tottenham from the Sounders, yeah, mm-hmm. The Sounders got a substantial amount of money. And if you heard our interview with Tam Backus last week, that's one of the things he said, that you know, you get money out of players that you develop and you know, eventually sell. Now, I don't know exactly what Carlton's future is, but I know that he was developed under the Georgia United and then what will be the Atlanta United system. Four players were developed and at one point were on the U.S. youth national teams. That says a lot about the talent and the ability for the coaches in this academy system to develop players that hopefully, even if they don't get as good as Carlton, they're good enough to be on the first team, and we can develop quality players that we don't. There won't be a need for us to go have to sign, you know, a big name European player. That's the point of this. That's why it's so important to develop your own players.
Well, I still think people want to see him go out and support or sign a big name European player.
No, I'm sure, and I'm not saying they wouldn't do that at the beginning, you know, to start. But right. for the future success of the team, it is important. It is absolutely vital that the academy succeeds along with it.
Oh, that you might not have said a more true thing on this entire podcast. Not to say that some of the things you haven't said are true, but yeah. I mean, that is one of the most, if not the most important thing for the long-term success, not just of an MLS club, but of any club. I mean, any club around the world. I mean, you look at La Masia in Barcelona. Why do you think Barcelona's been so good over the years? Because they've had players like Lionel Messi come through La Masia. So, you know, I mean, they've just developed an academy that is world-renowned. And obviously Ajax has one of the best academies in the world as well. So it's all about really putting that emphasis on how important that is.
Here's the other part of the equation here. And this is where I get to the whole uniting the Southeast as opposed to, you know, we're not just the city of Atlanta uniting Atlanta. We are the city of Atlanta uniting the Southeast. And this is where that comes into play. So here's some of the rules for the academy. You need to be in the academy for 1 year. So this is where the whole August comes into play. Conceivably, last August is when, you know, I guess Atlanta United announced that Georgia United was going to be their partner or their affiliate or whatever, however you want to phrase it. And that's pretty much the rule. You have to be in the academy for 1 year. And so you can sign as many homegrown players as you'd like. There's a certain – the way it works is – through money, and honestly, I have no idea. I don't have a good grasp. Hopefully, Matt Doyle next week when we release that interview, he'll have a little more information as to how the money aspect of it works. But basically, there's a certain amount of money you can spend on homegrown players, and that's just how it works. The thing about homegrown and the academy, there's a certain mileage. So Portland Timbers and all the other the academies around MLS. They have a radius, it's a 75-mile radius that they can basically pull players from. Portland can't come to Alabama and grab a player from Alabama.
Right.
So the way it gets interesting is that there are some who believe, or there's the idea that Atlanta United could one day become a residential academy, which means, and it's still, because I'm so new to this in terms of the academy stuff, you know, I'll be asking other people, and I'll be getting back to the podcast with more information. But if it's a residential academy, as long as they're in the residential, you can basically pull from anywhere. You can basically tap into the entire Southeast soccer community and invite them to your residential academy, and they could play for you. So that wouldn't just limit us to Atlanta. That would give us access to essentially the entire Southeast. DC United right now has a partnership with the school, and I think this is the best example of a residential academy. I don't know if this is exactly how it's going to work with Atlanta United, or for all we know, Atlanta United might not even do this. But this is just how the residential aspect of this works. DC United has a partnership with a school in which anyone can attend the school. And if you're at that school, you are part of the DC United Academy if you play soccer. So naturally, DC United would invite good players to come to their school and play soccer within their academy. I imagine that's how it works. That school is also like $20,000 to go to. And I forget what else you have to pay for with the school itself. So I don't know exactly how that would work. From the last conversations I've had, I would hate to say that this is entirely accurate, because again, I am again new to the academy aspect of MLS, but the residential aspect of this could be that they go to a local school or a school run by the team. Philadelphia runs their own school. Vancouver sends their players to a local high school. So that's how it could work. But if that residential aspect of the academy comes into play, then again, that is where we can draw from the entire Southeast, genuinely giving us that uniting the Southeast feel, and which would be an unbelievable advantage because there's no team in MLS is tapping into even remotely close to the talent that we have in the Southeast. And you think the Southeast and you think the football and even basketball here in Georgia, but my gosh, the amount of soccer that is played in the Southeast, specifically in Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Alabama, it's unbelievable just the amount of players that we could pull from.
Yeah, oh gosh, I mean, the possibilities are endless there. So that is definitely something that we hope happens because you talk about that whole aspect, uniting the Southeast, and I mean, there's no better way you can do that, at least in terms of the product on the field, and being able to draw players from, Alabama and Tennessee and South Carolina, and Georgia's in such a unique position in being surrounded by states that have pretty good youth soccer, obviously Georgia being the best out of those three, four examples that I used there, but it'll be really, really great to see MLS do something like that because Atlanta United would be a team almost more than anyone that could capitalize on something like
that. And this is why we're going to have this interview with Matt Doyle, who would know a lot better than us how the impression this is making on MLS, because it's not again. It's more than just MLS that have eyes on us right now, or the Atlanta United system or the academy, the progress that is, going into 2017. There are people that are genuinely just amazed at everything Atlanta United is doing. So we wanted to bring on someone that is going to be a lot. I've always said, and this is true with all the other sports in Atlanta, is we have the best knowledge of the inner workings of a club, of a team. I really do hate going to these football and basketball reference and baseball reference, but the people of Atlanta, the media pundits of Atlanta, know the Braves the best, know the Falcons the best, know the Hawks the best. Everyone else outside of Atlanta, they might have a better understanding of how they're perceived outside of Atlanta, but they don't understand the inner workings and how it's the local impact of a team's win, of a certain decision within a game, whatever it may be. They don't understand the local impact. We don't understand we in Atlanta don't understand the national implications of what Atlanta United is doing. And it really could be something special and something that changes MLS because of the next four teams that are coming. It could be a shift in how MLS operates moving forward.
Very much looking forward to the interview with Matt Doyle because, yeah, like you said, he's going to open our ears and eyes to some things that we're not as in the know about as a guy like that would be. So definitely look out for that next week. And we will shift gears now to a topic that I really want to just hopefully put to bed. I mean, I know I'm not the be-all-end-all authority on this or anything, but yeah, please.
If there are any questions or anything or any concerns, because we are going to have, again, this interview with Matt Doyle is going to be something that hopefully paints a better picture, a more specific picture. So if you have any questions, motspodcast@gmail.com, feel free to ask, and we'll do whatever we can to make sure those questions get to Matt Doyle or to anyone else that may know, and we'll give him, we'll hit him, we'll give you the answers on the podcasts, you know, in the future. But anyways, yes. That's it. I'm done with the academies.
Well, you got that right, because we're here for you guys. And if you guys have any questions or anything you want us to take care of there, definitely send them in. MOTSpodcast@gmail.com. All right. Switching gears to a topic that I wish people would stop talking about, because it's not going to happen here. It cannot logistically happen here. And I'm talking about pro-rel, promotion, relegation. Our setup in the United States is just not capable of doing this for a number of reasons. And we'll get into a lot of those, but the primary one for me is the way that the American sports scene is set up. It's not going to be feasible to have big-time MLS clubs going to 5,000 to 10,000 seat stadiums to play other teams. Like, say if, just Charleston Battery, for example. I'm just using them as an example. Obviously, we love Charleston. I'm not banging on Charleston at all when I say this. But that stadium, as currently constructed, is not ready to host MLS games for a number of reasons. The technology that it requires nowadays with ESPN or Fox Sports coming in and doing a game, you know, you need so many different things in terms of connectability, if that's even a word, and just connectivity, probably the better word to use there. But companies like ESPN and Fox aren't going to want to go into these places where they're going to have to do more work. We're seeing more and more, and I have some insight on this working with UGA Athletics, to where the SEC Network was formed, and pretty much every town or every venue that SEC sports is played in had to kind of update what they have. You know, I remember right before the SEC Network started, I mean, they were laying cable all around Athens just for that purpose. So it's about updating and staying current with everything. And there's just too many scenarios in MLS, USL, NASL, whatever, that it's just not feasible to have promotion or relegation. It's just not.
I'll be the first one to tell anyone that asks that I wish pro rel could exist in every sport.
Me too.
Because they would be amazing. But much like it wouldn't work in NFL, in Major League Baseball, in the NBA, that's exactly why it won't work in the United States soccer system. Here's the only way I ever see it working. We get to 40 teams, 40 MLS teams, and MLS somehow, and again, it'll never happen. So this is how crazy it's
going to
sound, but
it's not going to happen. It is not. But yes, please go ahead with your scatterbrained theory.
MLS gets the 40 teams, and of those 40 teams, the top 20, no, sorry, the bottom 20, however you want to decide what the bottom 20 are.
Well, I mean, think about what you just said. 40 teams.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, the NFL has 32 teams, and that's a lot. I mean, baseball has 30 teams. I think that's too much.
But yeah, 40 teams, and then you have the bottom 20 basically are subsidized or basically paid by MLS for the next however many years until, you know, MLS decides, okay, you guys can kind of manage on your own. They get paid to basically be second division, and that's how pro rel starts. It's not going to happen organically because of exactly the reason Sam laid out. You 15,000, I think 500 or 15,000 itself is the number of people you have to be able to host in a stadium. I don't know what the number is for Charleston, just as the example, but I'm pretty sure it's not 15,000. So that alone is a struggle for a number of teams. I know you just saw, or that FC Cincinnati just had broke the record, USL record, with 20,000. That's one example. And when is the last time that happened?
By the way, Charleston Stadium holds 5,113 people.
Exactly.
We love Charleston. We love the Battery. We're so happy to be affiliated with them.
Let's just
host MLS games. It just can't.
Let's just use the example locally. Let's say Silverbacks somehow made it all the way to first division. It just wouldn't work. They don't have the money to be in MLS to begin with.
Well, and I know that, you know, in European promotion and relegation, when you get promoted, you get a bunch of money in terms of the TV contracts. You know, you get that money. When a team qualifies for the Champions League, they get a crap ton of money.
But that's the, that
doesn't mean that, you know, MLS doesn't have that much money yet.
Well,
you know
they don't have the TV contracts. They don't have the way they make money is on attendance.
Right.
And when you cannot fill a minimum 15,000 seats because of either your stadium size or your lack of support, that becomes an issue for the stability of MLS, for the stability of U.S. soccer. The system that exists as it is only works. MLS, for the reason they're expanding to so many teams is because they need to be financially – that's how they're financially paying for themselves, in hopes – and this is where it kind of gets a little scary, at least in my opinion. They're doing this in hopes that eventually the support is there. There's a reason they're going after the markets they're going for, because they're top TV markets. That means, hopefully in the future, better TV deals.
Bigger cities, more money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's how they stabilize financially. And that's when you can possibly, and even then I don't think it works because of how just disjointed and how far apart MLS and just NASL are. Now, if you want to have this discussion, NASL down, I'm all for it. I think it can work. But otherwise, I don't see the point in even having the discussion to begin with, because it's just it can't happen the way. And honestly, I don't even want to be like EPL or La Liga or any of the European. I want American soccer to be American. If that means playoffs, yeah, just play. I guess playoffs. And if that means no pro rel, if that means no pro rel, if that means, you know, expansion teams until, you know, we reach 80 teams, then I, as much as I would hate that, then fine. I want American soccer to be American. I have no interest in being – we already have that. It's called the EPL. It's called La Liga. It's called Bundesliga. You also – what you don't see up until this year, you don't see any parity, which is – it's so unique to – it's just so American.
Right.
And that's the beautiful thing about the U.S. soccer system. And as frustrating as it is, it's still awesome, in my opinion.
Because it's American. It's just different. I agree with that.
I have no interest in being like the rest of the world.
I'll say this. One thing I wish MLS would do, and I think with more teams could be possible, is switch over to more of the European-style setup in terms of having the regular season determine your champion and then also having a tournament within the season to crown a – so you could have playoffs in a sense – and have the champion, because I like that way of determining a champion in soccer.
Well, they do that. They do have that. It's called the Supporter Shield.
Well, but dude, come on, the Supporter Shield.
I mean, what, how else would
you won the regular season? It doesn't mean you're it doesn't mean you're MLS champion.
So then, what would the point of the playoffs be?
Well, it's like the FA Cup in the regular season over there.
We already have that. It's called the U.S. Open Cup.
Well, right, but it's not on the U.S. Open Cup is like the FA Cup, and I get that. But you also even have another one over there in the Capital One Cup. I guess it used to be called the Carling Cup, where I think that's just teams from the EPL. I really do wish they would switch more to that points-based system that determines your champion that way, because I like that better. The one-off in the playoffs kind of thing is more American, and I get that, but that's just not my favorite way of determining things.
I'm fine with exactly the setup that we have.
I don't mind if they keep it. I mean, if it stays there, that's fine. But
yeah,
it's just a thought.
I don't know that I want to get to 40 teams. I don't know how much more.
That's way too many teams.
I don't know how many more teams I want added, but I do like the way things are. Now, if you want to introduce something where, you know, after 28, 32, whatever the hell it is, then you start including a second division, and that second division becomes what ends up being utilized as pro rel. That's another way, I guess, I could see how pro rel could be a thing. But it's not going to, you know, I love the people that just clamor for pro rel because they think it's going to happen overnight. And
it's never going to happen. Pro rel
to be a thing at this point would take at least 20, 30 years. I totally agree with you.
Well, I mean, look at the thing I was harping on earlier, the stadium size. Look at some of the teams in the EPL that have recently been promoted or teams that aren't always in the EPL. Crystal Palace, for example. Selhurst Park holds 26,255 people, and that's supposed to be a small club. Norwich City, their stadium holds 27,244. Leicester, you're about to be crowned champion, who is a smaller club, not one of the bigger clubs, 32,262 at the King Power Stadium. And one more for you, a team that's in the championship right now but has been in the EPL recently, Hull City, 25,450. So what I'm saying is it wouldn't work here unless every single USL and NASL team upgraded their stadium significantly.
Okay, just a fun fact. Did you mention Bournemouth?
I didn't, but that is one I wanted to check out.
Bournemouth 11,464.
And I'm sure that English Premier League was upset when Bournemouth got promoted. Like, that stadium's not big enough. And so they were probably, you know, having to scramble to figure out what to do there.
There's a reason they have a number. There's a reason they want these. That generally stadiums go for 20,000 to 30,000 people is because they need the ticket sales. That's how they make them. That's how they are financially viable right now. Until they get the TV deals, that's the only time I can't stress this enough, when ProRail even becomes a viable option, and even then, that's when the clock starts ticking. For however many years it ultimately takes to get that. Until that happens, it's just a pointless discussion.
Yeah, look, like another thing about Bournemouth, to use them for an example, they're already talking about building or expanding their stadium because, look, they're in a very good chance to, like, make the Europa League. And if they do, then that means they'll have even more money. And what's the first thing they're talking about doing? Upgrading the stadium, because I guarantee you the league has put immense pressure on them to do so if they're going to continue to stay in the EPL. So if you look at the way that American system is set up, you're talking about dozens and dozens, if not, you know, tens, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s of teams that are going to have to do massive upgrades to their stadium. So again, like you said, if it were to even come close to happening here.
The last thing I'll say is that, and I'm sure if anyone responds to this, it's going to be the people that say, well, you're talking about teams getting promoted and getting more money, and then they're able to, you know, do more, you know, build, expand their stadiums and whatnot. Okay, yeah, well, let's just say, you know, just as an example, Atlanta United gets relegated. You lose a lot if you get relegated, not just in terms of the money.
Not just in terms of money, in terms of the fan interest.
Exactly. You lose so much, and then the incentive to be a team in whatever, NASL, USL, whatever it ends up being, or whatever it would be, it's not as compelling. You're paying, in Atlanta United's case, $70 million to be in MLS. You're going to be in MLS. That's not how it worked when it was a different time. It was a different era when, you know, English soccer first started, when Spanish soccer first started. It was a whole different era. You know, you didn't have these ridiculous stadiums. You had a bunch of local clubs, and that's how it began. It's different now. You can't expect the American soccer system to work the same way, nor do I personally want it to work the same way, as the European model. And I mean, that's it. That's all I got.
You're totally right. Look, my last thing on it is this.
We might have some angry emails later.
We are going to have angry emails later, because I've been kind of following along a little bit here with our man Jason Longshore's ATL soccer Twitter chat, and apparently it turned into a pro rel just discussion there. So I think we will get some angry emails, but I think you and I are on the same page here that it's just not a feasible thing. And I'll just say this, bottom line. A stadium that seats 5,000 people, you are not going to be able to generate enough revenue to be an MLS club. Bottom line. And that's really it. That's really all we got to say about that. And as much as some people are going to be butthurt about hearing that, that is the situation as it is currently presented, and that's just how it's going to be. Again, like Eric said, if ProRail is even a remote possibility in the future, it ain't coming for a long, long, long time.
And I'm fine with that. Again, I don't want to be like the European, like the Spanish, like the German model.
It's just, exactly.
You look at here's the thing. They're even thinking about starting a, and anyone that's paid attention to soccer, they're thinking about starting a European Super League. And what does that do? That eliminates ProRail.
Yes, it does. Like if you add 20, you know, I guess you would have to have like 20 teams. But yeah, if you had 20 teams in a European Super League, and like you had Manchester United, Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, and Man City all leave the EPL, well, that pretty much crushes the EPL. But and thank you for that tweet there, Eric. That's pretty funny. telling people to send hate mail to me. Although, you know, again, both of us have the same opinion on this, but I digress. It's just something that is going to be very tough to make happen. And like you said there, yeah, if there's this European Super League, you can't have ProRail there. And I think people would love that. I don't know who all, you know, would be against it, but I think it's just a fan of wanting to see the best teams, the best soccer at all times. That's a very intriguing idea.
So there's a statistic on the Blog Talk Radio stats that is just the percentage of people that listen to the whole podcast to completion. If we got them to the ProRail argument, we might have got them all the way through. But I don't know, because this is going on like an hour and a half now.
It really is, and that's the thing. We've got to stop just because we've got to save some of our stuff for next week with our conversation with Matt Doyle. So very much looking forward to that. Yeah, and if you got hate stuff for me on ProRail, send tweets to @EricQuintana47. That's how you reach me. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, @SamJFranco, @EricQuintana47. If you got stuff for us on ProRail, we'll be happy to hear it. But I hate to be a realist about the situation. Just not going to happen. Not going to happen. Sorry about it, folks. Again, thank you so much for listening for as long as you have. This has
time out. It sounds like we're going off on a sad note. We're happy. We're good. We're
good. I was going to say, yeah, no, I'm great. I'm totally. I know a lot of people are super stoked for ProRail, but
Atlanta United
to bring down the hammer. But
Atlanta United Academy is about to take off. You know, we're about to be the soccer team of the South, so of the Southeast at least.
You got that right. That's what I'm talking about. United in the South.
Pet this thing up again.
Going out on a positive note, follow us @MOTS Podcast on Twitter, DirtySouthSoccer.com. You can also follow @DirtySouthSock on Twitter, DirtySouthSOC. And again, follow the Mouths of the South individually on Twitter, @SamJFranco, @EricQuintana47, @JasonIsASmith. Did want to pass this along about Jason. We did get a message from him. False alarm, no baby tonight. So, Baby is a Smith watch continues, and we will keep you updated on that as well. And again, talking to Matt Doyle, MLS analyst on Twitter, @MLS analyst, next week. So, looking forward to that. Thank you guys so much for joining us. This has been another edition of the Mouths of the South podcast, and thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
See ya!